Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, sad day. Former Vice President Walter Mondale passed away. He was 93 years old, credited with making the vice presidency, I guess, more relevant, is what the news has been saying. But President Jimmy Carter said today, "I mourn the passing of my dear friend, Walter Mondale, who I consider the best vice president in our country's history. I only wish he would have done better when he ran for president. But he passed away today at 93. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, maybe a thought on Walter Mondale. I've got our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
No, thank you, Rick.
So I got to be honest, I didn't realize that Walter Mondale was still alive until I found out he passed.
Right. Actually, I'm going to be real honest. I was in the same. I, like you, follow this, follow news, and I was in the same boat. I thought he was still, you know, I thought he had passed.
Did you ever meet him? Did you ever have any dealings with him?
Or was no dealings. Saw him once at an event. I think it was one of the, some event I was at, but didn't meet him, just saw him. He was a U.S. Senator, of course, from Minnesota. He lost to Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Which was
badly.
You know, he lost badly, and now I do remember the more modern news he made when Senator Wellstone died, and he was going to be nominated for senator, but then he was defeated by Norm Coleman, Senator Norm Coleman. So yeah, he actually tried to make a comeback then, and that would have been about, 18 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I actually remember that. So, but right. Sad to hear of his passing. 93
yes.
Years. That's a good run, right?
Yes, it's a good run. Just like President Carter has had, a very fascinating life, and President Carter is what 90. Is he 98 or 7?
Yeah, I thought he was close to 100.
He's my dad's age, I think. I think he's 98.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a young guy.
No, not at all.
Let's move to your neck of the woods. Evidently, one of the representatives there, Steve Stivers. I guess he's, I guess that's how you say his name, Stivers, right?
Stivers.
Stivers, all right. Well, he's leaving Congress, going to take a cushy gig with the Chamber of Commerce.
You know, the other congressman from Pat Teaberry, who actually shared Licking County with me, first it was Kasich and I, and then Teaberry and I, he left to go to the sort of like a business roundtable, big paying job. And now Stivers, who's up in Columbus too, where Teaberry also was a congressman, he's going to run the Ohio Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, time to cash in. Everyone's jumping ship, it seems.
Yep, they sure are. Yeah, he was, Stivers was a staffer, started out actually as a staffer for, I think, for Teaberry at one point in time. And he was in the military, and then he got into the Ohio Senate. But, he'll have a job. A lot of them leave to go, on to, some type of cushy job.
You do your couple of years in government, do a couple of favors, you make your way into a cushy gig, and still my favorite one is Tobin, I think his name was, Billy Tobin. He was congressman from Louisiana,
went on to
be the head of Big Pharma.
Right, I knew Billy Tobin, why am I, I'm having a senior moment, Billy Tozan.
Tozan, that's it.
He was from Louisiana, Tozan. He was pretty funny. When I did the Help America Vote Act with Denny Hoyer, Tozan asked a question. We were in a caucus meeting, and he asked a question about the bill, and he said, by the way, he said, we got rid of our levers, for the elections. He said, we sold them to Mexico, and he said, Edwards is now president of Mexico. Edwin Edwards, who was governor of Louisiana. So everybody cracked up. He made a joke about, Louisiana system being corrupt.
Yeah, well, nothing is surprising there. I wanted to get your thoughts on Kevin McCarthy's threatening to bring action against Maxine Waters for her comments about the trial there and everything going on in Minnesota. Let's start with what she said. I mean, you know, I don't think what she said was completely outrageous. Maybe a little inflammatory. That if it goes the wrong way, we've got to be more vocal, a little more confrontational. I don't know that that's. I don't know that that's threatening. Thoughts?
Well, I know Maxine quite well. Maxine Waters was my ranking member for the Housing Subcommittee, and so I was chairman. She was the ranking member. We worked, you know, together constantly. I went to Los Angeles in her district and did you know, tours of her area. We went. In fact, Maxine and I had the first hearing on in Louisiana after Katrina. Nobody had had a hearing, and we went down and had a hearing together. So I know her quite well, and you know she's a fireball, and so I paid particular attention to this story. And knowing her as I do, I paid particular attention to exactly what she said. And she said, "We've got to stay on the street." She went to the little town was called Brooklyn.
Brooklyn Center.
Not New York, but, you know, Brooklyn up near...
Brooklyn Center, Minnesota.
Yeah, where the trial is. And she said, and we've got to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure they know that we mean business. So the part that he is taking is we've got to get more confrontational. And again, I read this clearly. I know Congresswoman, you know, Maxine Waters well, and he's trying to build this into something it is not. She just simply said more confrontational. Now, if she had said, we have to go after the police, we have to, you know, do damage, we have to riot, something like that, you know, then that's a different world. But all she said was, we've got to get more confrontational, which, you know, you could stand and be vocal and be confrontational. You know, you can argue. So I think this is a symptom, Rick, of what happens in Congress. You know, somebody says something out there, and it might be, you know, considered outrageous, and then they start to go after them. You can't say this. We're going to censure you. And it just keeps going on. It's probably going to keep going back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. So I think, again, I don't think he's going to be able to, McCarthy, take any action over these words that she's trying to start a riot.
Yeah. Now, the judge had some interesting words also today. You know, that, you know, and I look at this and I go, you know, is it helpful? I'm glad the judge didn't declare a mistrial, because my first thought when I heard it brought up, I'm like, oh, this would really set things off if they declared a mistrial over that.
I tried to find, I don't know, maybe you found an elaboration on what the judge said. I couldn't find, you know, any more details except what I saw on Twitter, where he said, you know, the defense could potentially use this for an appeal.
Yeah, and that in itself is kind of inflammatory. But he also did say, look, there's not enough here for me to declare a mistrial, and
right,
you know, we're going forward.
But I didn't understand how that fit into an appeal process of what she said.
Well,
I don't get it.
I don't either, because I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, there's part of me that goes, if, you know, the defense is arguing that the jurors should have been sequestered so that they could get none of the news and none of the updates and none of the stuff that was going on, because, you know, you got to assume that the jurors went home and saw stuff and saw the riots over the weekend. And that, you know, I would think, you know, by her saying that if, and this is where my thinking goes, and you can disagree, that if they don't find him guilty, there's going to be riots. There's going to be, you know, bloodshed in the street, and it's going to be the juror's fault for doing it.
Well, that's okay. I can see now where that goes to. Okay, that if he is acquitted, then, you know, again, I don't see where the Congresswoman said, if he's acquitted, we're going to riot. But if you know, if he's acquitted, we got to stay on the street. Okay, I now see, you know, where potentially, which an attorney can use anything, where potentially an attorney might use that. But there's been a ton of other things said, I think, far more inflammatory than that.
Yeah, I think the video is far more inflammatory than that. I think the video of a cop with a guy on the guy's neck for 9.5 minutes, that's a lot more inflammatory. So you have any thoughts? I mean, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, putting their money down on if he's guilty, not guilty, which charge, where do you find yourself?
Well, I think that he'll be found guilty. I think that the sentence may not be as, trying to second guess the judge, but I think the sentence may not be as steep as people would want.
Yeah, that's a riot down the road we've got to worry about.
Yeah, I think he'll be found guilty. I'm just not sure. I mean, in some people's minds, it's a 25-year thing or 30, or, you know, I don't think it's going to be to that extent.
Yeah, I think he's going to get found guilty of the lesser charge of second-degree manslaughter.
Right.
We'll see what
they
come up with.
That could be 9 years, you know, 10 years.
Yep. That and it would be something, but I still think there would be chaos.
Correct.
And not good.
I agree.
Let's move along. Evidently, the officer, Brian Sicknick, the officer who died during the Capitol riots, evidently died of natural causes. Was just standing around and keeled over, had a couple of strokes. Natural causes is what they ruled this. I don't know how you can rule that natural causes. I'm just curious.
I mean, I was shocked. Because there was, you know, a talk about how he was, you know, he was hit with a fire extinguisher, you know, and that's what we always had heard. And, you know, they're saying the autopsy, you know, the medical examiner. Now, in the Washington Post, the medical examiner said the autopsy found no evidence that he had an allergic reaction to chemical irritants, which would have caused him to, you know, potentially have a seizure in his throat, but it said that he suffered two strokes at the base of the brain, and it was caused by a clot. I'm surprised.
Yeah, 42 years old.
You have it and you die. I don't know. I find it hard to believe. I'm not saying that's not what he died from. I'm finding it very hard to believe in that situation with what was going on and the trauma and the, you know, and everything else going on. I find it hard to believe. Had that not been going on, he would have suffered a stroke at that moment and died had it been just a regular day.
Yeah, and
I find it hard to believe.
So now my mind goes to this place, the people who are doing what they're doing, they're spraying him with stuff, they're attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're off the hook, you know, because, you know, he had a bubble that was going to burst. Did their actions not cause that bubble to burst? You know, I'm starting to think, you know, you walk from this?
Well, let's compare this to George Floyd. George Floyd did have a problem with, problem with his heart. There's no question about that. If the policeman had not kneeled on his neck that day, would he have all of a sudden died on the street? I doubt it.
Doubt it.
He would have died at some point in time in his life, but like everybody, but not at that moment. It's the same with this. Would he have just been walking in the Capitol on a regular day and died? I just have to believe, just like, you know, George Floyd, I would have to believe that it's the incidences that led up to causing that medical condition to occur all of a sudden into the arena of death.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. And speaking of crazy, have you found the MyPillow guy? He started a new TV network.
No, I didn't know that.
I think it's Frank Speech. I don't know who Frank is, but frankspeech.org, I think it is, .com. Not doing well. On the first couple of days, they got spoofed into believing that Donald Trump was on the line for him. And it's not going well. I tried to log in. Not much there. But he's trying. He's trying. He's also filed a $1.6 billion countersuit against Dominion Voting Systems, which should go well for him.
Right. You saw where he was pranked, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and the prank caller acted like they were Donald Trump calling him, and
Yep.
And you look at this guy, and I mean, I saw him on TV. We all saw him on MyPillow, and I thought he was kind of eccentric, but he had a pillow. You got to give the guy credit.
He developed
this pillow that makes him a, you know, multimillionaire. Then all of a sudden, he gets in the middle of the chaos and aftermath of that election afterwards, and I thought, what's he doing in the middle of this?
Yep.
For what reason?
It goes to show that rich people aren't very... You got stupid rich people, too.
Right, exactly.
But he's not going to have that problem for very long. Because,
right.
You know, they're going to sue him, and the way he's spending money on whatever Frank's speech is, again, whoever Frank is.
Right. Yeah, it will have no traction, especially in today's world. It just won't.
It's sad. And finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on the big meeting today, Joe Biden and a bipartisan group of lawmakers, Oval Office, infrastructure. Anything come out of it?
Well, I think it was a good meeting to have. And this would actually be the second meeting. And, he talks to the group. I think, again, it's good for the president to do it. He's extending, as much of an olive branch as he can do with them. Now, it's made up of five Democrats. It had four Republicans and one independent, with it.
Right.
And Mitt Romney was part of the group. Of course, he's one of the bigger names with it. And so I think it was a good thing to do. Right now, there's talk about where Senator Manchin's at on the corporate tax increase, which would... he would be for, I think, if I read right, taking it down 3 or 4%.
25%.
Right, down, like 3% from 28 to 25, which would cause the president to have to shave part of the bill. The bill's kind of divided into four parts. You and I have talked about that before. So, the White House will have to deal with that, and maybe they'll get a couple people out of the meeting.
Yeah,
you never know.
Look, you only had a handful of Republicans. It's not going to be enough to get you to 10. So I'm almost of the mindset of you go through these exercises, but you still got to go through and get this passed by whichever means necessary.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the president's part, he's genuinely having these meetings. There's two of them on this issue alone, and they're bipartisan. I think the president will be receptive as this process goes. He wants it done, by summer. I think the president will be receptive to interaction with Republicans as this goes on. He might get some grief for that, possibly from the Democratic leadership in the Senate, but I think the president's right in doing it.
Yep.
If the Republicans then, as we know, may not want to cooperate, then the president has done his part. There's nothing more he can do. And then finally, it's a decision remaining with, 50 people in the Senate, and it has to happen. This is one that the president can't lose.
No, he can't lose this. So let me ask you this, because Manchin came out today, and I know I said last question, but Manchin came out today in favor of the PRO Act. He signed on to be a co-sponsor to the PRO Act, which I've been saying, if he doesn't do anything on the filibuster, was just an empty gesture. Is it possible to get something like the PRO Act attached to the infrastructure bill as it moves through budget reconciliation?
Well, I mean, it is. It's possible. I mean, that's a big deal. Manchin would back the PRO Act bill, to eliminate right-to-work laws. And that's, as we know, that is a major deal. That's major support that Manchin is giving to the unions. And, I mean, if I were in leadership and I were Senator Schumer, I would surely want to add something of that nature to the reconciliation bill, so he doesn't have to have the supermajority that you need 60 votes. I would want to do that, so it might have some legs.
I hope so.
It would be a good one to add. Let's put it that way.
No, it would be fantastic. But can you do something like that through budget reconciliation?
Well, he can. I mean, he can if he adds it in there. Now it'll be argued, obviously, by the Republicans. It doesn't belong. It's extra material. But in my time there, I've seen many, many things in the Budget Reconciliation Act in the Senate. This would not be unusual to add something in there because, it does have budgetary impacts, and that's all it has to have.
No, it definitely does. It means that you're going to get more people,
the
more money into people's pockets, and it's going to have a major reverberation effect
government.
Yep, I think it'd be a great thing, and
it would be big.
I'm glad he did it. I'm not bashing him today.
I was just going to say this will give him a bit of a reprieve since January on some of the other things that Senator Manchin has talked about that has not made the progressive side of the Democratic Party happy.
No, you're spot on. As always, right. Bob, I appreciate the time. Good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, if this gets through, this could have major ramifications for working people across the country. Because like Bob said, it ends this idiotic construct of right to work. And I would love to have a right to work. I would love to propose an actual, true, honest right to work law that says you have a right to the job. You have a right to decent wages, a right to decent health care, a right to decent retirement security, a right to safe workplaces. An actual right that comes with actual work so that the right to work would actually make sense. Instead of, well, we're going to make sure that you don't have the ability to negotiate or bargain, and we're going to put the government between you and your employer by saying you cannot, under the rule of law, agree to a contract. Because that's what it says. You cannot agree to certain things. And for my anti-government folks, you should be angry at that. Also on the infrastructure front, and I wanted to get, I didn't bring it up with Bob, but evidently there are 15 senators who are signing on to Mike Lee's commitment to stop all earmarks. And anybody who's listened longer than a couple of months knows that I'm a fan of earmarks. I think you need to bring home the bacon. That's how we get things done. And as long as they're transparent, as long as they're in public, as long as we don't have the backroom dealings that we've seen in the past, we need to have specific things for people's districts that they come to Washington and they bring back. That's how we build our infrastructure. That's how local communities get their needs met. I am a big fan of it. It's what we should have been doing all along, just in a much, much more transparent way. But you know, all quote unquote conservatives. You got Cronin from Texas, McConnell, the minority leader, Josh Hawley, Joni Ernst, Ben Sasse, and Rand Paul, because he throws his name into anything that's horrible. So there you go. I'm looking forward to this infrastructure plan. I think this is going to be a good thing. They're just going to have to get this. They have to get it done. And by having these conversations with Romney and the gang of, hey, let's scale that $2.2 trillion bill down to $600 billion, that ain't going to cut it. We need big, we need chunky, we need transformational, we need visionary. We need to make massive changes. Because look, as we come out of this pandemic, people are going to need jobs and lots of them. And this kind of investment could bring that kind of much needed employment. And you add that into a scenario where they're good union wage jobs, where they're paying prevailing wage, that is going to be a good thing. Just my thought. I'd love to hear yours, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. Going to be an interesting week as we tick down to the Chauvin decision. What's the jury going to decide? I'm hoping it'll be like an hour. They come back guilty. All counts. But we'll see how long this takes. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.